This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents The House on the Water, a novella. Written by Margot Hunt. Performed by Taylor Schilling.
Prologue. Our annual tradition started in the summer of 1994, just after Esme and I graduated from Tulane. We had no idea then that we were taking the first steps together down such a dark, twisted path. If we had, maybe we could have stopped what was to come. Maybe everything would have turned out differently. I'd moved back into my parents' house in West Palm Beach. Esme had also returned to her hometown of Miami, although she was living on her own in an apartment on Brickell Avenue that her father rented for her. Esme called it the Pink Pad. It had come fully furnished by a terrible decorator who must have been obsessed with cotton candy pink. The couch, chairs, drapes, upholstered bed, and matching linens were all done up in the same sickly sweet shade. Esme and I made fun of it, but I was deeply jealous. I was back living in my childhood bedroom, complete with Duran Duran posters still tacked to the wall. Esme called me one night. "What are you doing? I'm bored out of my mind. Let's go somewhere." "I wish I could. I have to work." "You can take a few days off, can't you?" Esme's tone was wheedling. "Come on, Caroline, you know you want to." I smiled into the phone. My best friend knew me too well. Post-college life was not living up to my expectations. Shockingly, there wasn't much of a job market for recent graduates with European history degrees. So I was waitressing at Chili's and trying to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I spent all my nights off watching TV with my parents and trying to wash the scent of fajitas out of my hair. The idea of getting away for a few days was irresistible. "I'll ask my manager if I can take next weekend off," I said.
"Woo!
We can go to Key West and drink away our sorrows."
"Okay, but we can't stay anywhere expensive," I warned her.
"Don't worry. I'll find us a cheap and seedy hotel," Esme promised. "We're gonna have a blast." A week later, Esme and I were sitting in a bar on Duval Street where Hemingway had once been a patron. In the week since I'd last seen her, Esme had chopped off her long and luxurious dark hair into an unfortunate pixie cut. She'd slicked it back with hair gel and bobby pins. Clearly the haircut was a huge mistake, but I was bored and wanted to change things up, she explained, crossing one leg over the other. She was wearing a satin black slip dress, chunky Doc Marten shoes, and bright red lipstick. I felt underdressed in my tank top and shorts. Esme looked glamorous, and I looked like a tourist. "You have the cheekbones to pull it off," I said supportively. "Thank you, but it looks awful, and you know it." Esme shrugged and lit a cigarette.
"I don't care. It'll grow out eventually. Just remind me never to cut off all my hair again, okay? You have to call me ahead of time if you want me to stop you."
"It was a spontaneous thing. You know what I'm like. Act now, think later." Is that how I ended up in Key West on the hottest weekend of the year? I think my head's melting. Sweat beaded on my skin and dripped down into my cleavage. "Don't tell me you're not having fun, because I don't believe that for a minute." Esme waved a hand at the bartender. "Another round, please." "It definitely beats watching Dateline with Doug and Susan," I said as the bartender set two bottles of beer down in front of us.
"Exactly. You know what? We should make a pledge to do this every year, no matter what. Until one of us dies," Esme said.
"Wait, why does one of us have to die in this scenario?" "Okay, fine. Every year until we're stuck in nursing homes or something." "What if we ended up in the same nursing home? That would be fun."
"We could share a room. Oh, just like we did freshman year,"
Esme sighed and took a long sip from her beer.
"Back when we were young and innocent."
I laughed again. That had only been 4 years ago. "Okay. Okay, I promise."
"What?
You said we should make a pledge to do this every year. I'm promising."
"Oh, right." Esme paused. "I promise to. And it is possible I'm drunk."
"It's more than possible. You're definitely drunk."
I just think it's important to have traditions, to know we'll always have each other. I mean, God knows where we'll end up. I don't know where I'll be in 10 minutes, much less in 10 years. I didn't really believe that. Esme was flighty, but she was also a trust fund kid who knew that she'd always be okay. Her irresponsibility was just casual rebellion. I had a more pedantic, regimented personality, and yet I still felt unmoored, unsure of which direction life was taking me. Esme never really had to worry. She was the heiress to a fast food fortune, a chain of sandwich restaurants called Wrapped, that her father, Henry Overfield, had founded in the 80s. All she had to do to have a successful life was not screw up. It was hardly fair, but it wasn't her fault. That's what I kept reminding myself anyway. I patted Esme's arm. In 10 minutes, you'll be sitting next to me in this very bar. That sounds totally plausible, but where will I be in 10 years? I smiled. I knew Esme well enough to know that she didn't want me to answer honestly. She didn't want me to tell her that she'd probably be working for her father, possibly be married, maybe even be a mom. Esme wanted me to tell her a story. Let me see. I hesitated, trying to think of something that would entertain her. You'll have moved to Los Angeles. Los Angeles! What am I doing out there? I could never be an actress. Why not? Because whenever I lie, I start blinking uncontrollably. Esme demonstrated, batting her eyelashes. Huh, I said. I always thought your contacts were bothering you when you did that. No, I was totally lying. Anyway, give me a different job. I considered this. You'll be a personal stylist to the stars. I get to spend all day shopping with other people's money. That sounds fun. Esme already shopped whenever she wanted with money she hadn't earned. She didn't sift through the sale racks at chain stores like the rest of us. Her clothes, even the trendy ones, were purchased at high-end department stores with a credit card she never got the bill for. I was about to point this out, but I stopped myself. It wasn't Esme's fault that she came from money any more than it was my fault that I didn't. And after all, I was the one who started this alternative reality fantasy. And then one year, you'll be hired to dress an up-and-coming actress who's been nominated for an Academy Award for some obscure art film. She'll end up winning the Oscar and you'll suddenly become the it girl of stylists. They'll even want you to star in a television show about stylists. So I'll become famous as an actress without even having to act. Definitely. You'll be a household name. Esme grinned at this, but then her smile faded. Sounds amazing. But I have a feeling my future won't be quite that glamorous. Why's that? I've been meaning to tell you. I've decided to go to business school. Really? That's a big decision, I was taken aback. When did that happen? I've been thinking about it for a while, but I just signed up to take the GMAT. I'll see how I do, and then I'll start applying. I should have been happy for my friend. Instead, I just felt even more adrift in my own life. I tried to push down my jealousy and raised my bottle in a toast. Good luck. I'm sure you'll do great. Thanks. Esme clinked her bottle against mine and then leaned over, resting her head on my shoulder. And every year, we'll get together and travel somewhere together just like this, no matter what else is happening in our lives. I love you, Caro. You always get sappy when you're drunk. I nudged her and smiled. But I love you too. Chapter 1. 26 years later. The trip was doomed from the start. I hadn't had a panic attack in years, but as soon as John backed our SUV down the driveway and the garage door slid closed, I could feel my pulse start to race and my breath grow shallow. The sensation scared me. I wanted nothing more than to throw open the door, jump out, and run back to the safety of our house. Maybe we shouldn't go, I said. We've talked about this, John replied. We certainly had. We'd discussed whether or not to cancel the Labor Day trip at length, each arguing one side and then abruptly switching and arguing the other. We'd already paid for the vacation house. Then again, it was just money. Esme had recently gone through an unpleasant divorce and needed cheering up. But our family was in crisis. Sitting at home wouldn't help anything, though the last thing either of us felt like was taking a vacation. "Let's just go," I'd finally said, exhausted by the debate. "It's just a week. It won't change anything in the long run." "Fine," John had said in agreement. But now I wasn't so sure. "What if Aiden needs us?" I asked softly. John made a sound somewhere between a snort and a humorless laugh. "Our son doesn't need us. All he cares about is that we keep paying his bills." "You don't mean that." "Yes, I damned well do." I stared out my window at a street of well-appointed homes with pristine lawns and professional landscaping, taking in the familiar sight of our serene Jacksonville neighborhood. We'd purchased the house 12 years earlier, when Aiden was 10. At the time, we could barely afford the staggering mortgage, but it had seemed worth the sacrifice to get Aiden into a better school district, to give him every possible advantage in life. That hadn't exactly worked out as planned. I'd always thought we were a normal family. Boring, almost. John worked as a financial advisor. I was a realtor. Growing up, Aiden had always been a kind, sweet-natured boy. We worried that he spent too much time playing video games, but all parents worried about that. He'd always been a good student and made friends easily. Now, Aiden was in his senior year at the University of Central Florida. Or at least we thought he was. 3 weeks earlier, Aiden had called John at work one morning to let us know he was in jail. He'd been arrested buying heroin from a man who had turned out to be an informant working for the police. I'd had no idea my son had ever taken heroin, but before I could even process that horrifying fact, all sorts of other secrets came spilling out. We found out Aiden had stopped going to classes. He'd moved out of the apartment we were still paying rent for and was living with his new girlfriend named Darcy, who had a history of drug addiction. John and I hired the best criminal attorney we could find, an overly confident man named Tank Crawley, who recommended that Aiden immediately enroll in an inpatient drug treatment program. He thought this would make a good impression on the state's attorney charged with prosecuting the case, so Aiden went along with it. I had my reservations. I didn't get the sense that Aiden was committed to getting sober or that he had any real grasp on how much damage he was doing to his life, to any of our lives. Suddenly, without warning, John and I had been plunged into a hell that involved court dates, drug counselors, and reading terrifying articles on the living hell that was heroin addiction. And now, in the middle of all of that, John and I were going on vacation. The trip had, of course, been planned before everything blew up. Esme and I had kept the pledge we'd made all those years ago in Key West, one trip a year, no matter what. The first few had been just the two of us. I was broke through my early 20s, so we chose locations we could drive to. Tampa, Orlando, Destin. Later, when we both married, we started bringing our respective spouses along and started traveling a bit further away. One year we went to New York City and another to San Francisco. The only time we missed a trip was the year when I was pregnant with Aiden and my obstetrician had put me on bed rest. We'd had to cancel our plans to meet in Hilton Head, and instead, Esme and her husband, David, came to stay with us in Jacksonville for a long weekend. Esme had lounged in bed next to me while we binge-watched movies on the Lifetime Channel and ate bowls of buttery popcorn. This year, we'd booked a rental in Shoreham, Florida, a small seaside town that was roughly equidistant between Jacksonville and Miami, in an attempt to make this year's trip a bit more festive and to keep Esme from feeling like a post-divorce third wheel. We'd invited along Esme's brother, Nick, and his new husband, Ford,
to join us for the first time. "What time are Esme and her crew arriving?" John asked. "I don't think they're driving together." I checked my phone. "Esme texted 20 minutes ago and said she was on her way, so we'll probably get there at about the same time." "Why wouldn't they drive together?" John asked. I smiled for what felt like the first time in weeks. "I know Esme wants to rebuild her relationship with Nick, but I don't think she's ready to be locked in a car with him for 3 hours. Any idea what his new husband's like?" I asked Esme about him. She said that Ford is handsome, charming, and cocky, which sounds pretty much like every guy Nick has ever dated. Anyway, I think it's a good thing that Esme and Nick are trying to repair their relationship. "Why is that?" "You know their dad has prostate cancer. The prognosis isn't great. Once he passes away, they'll need each other. At the end of the day, they're family. And isn't that the most important thing?" "Is it?" "Sometimes I wonder if it isn't all overrated," John said sourly. I knew we were no longer talking about Esme and Nick. "Thank you for sharing that lovely sentiment." "Jesus, Caroline." John glanced at me, his expression wary. "All I meant was..." "Just stop," I said, interrupting him. "I don't want to hear it." We rode for the rest of the trip in silence. Chapter 2. "I think this is it," John said, pulling into the short, paved driveway. I recognized the aqua blue house from the picture on the website. It was 3 stories with a 2-car garage. There was a white Mercedes convertible parked in the driveway. "Someone beat us here," I said. "Damn, that means we won't get first dibs on a bedroom," John said. "I'll get the luggage. You go ahead." I got out of the car. It was hot and humid out, which was typical for South Florida in September. The house looked friendly and larger than it had online, and I felt my spirits buoy. Now that we were here, I might as well enjoy myself, I thought. The glass-paned front door was unlocked. It opened onto a narrow hallway and a tall flight of stairs leading to the upper stories. "Hello," I called out, climbing the narrow stairs. "Caroline," Esme called back. "You made it." Esme appeared on the 2nd floor, grinning down at me. She looked fantastic. Esme had always been slim, but she was now thinner than ever. It made her blue eyes look even larger, her cheekbones sharper. She was coolly glamorous in a white tank top paired with flowing white linen pants, and her long, dark hair was loose over her tanned shoulders. I was suddenly aware of how rumpled my tunic shirt and khaki shorts were after the long car ride. "You look amazing," I said. I ran a self-conscious hand through my short, blonde bob, which had picked today of all days to go frizzy. "You sound surprised," Esme laughed. She gave me a brief hug and I breathed her in. She smelled like she always did, a pleasant mixture of jasmine and citrus. "It hasn't been that long since we've seen each other. When did you come to Miami?" "June. I can't have changed that much in 3 months." I leaned back and looked at her again. "It's not that, it's just... you look happy." "I am happy. Or happier, anyway. Where's John?" "He's getting the bags." I glanced around, taking in my surroundings. "Wow, this place is nice." The living room was large and airy. There was a white sectional couch, several chairs upholstered in an aqua blue pattern, and glass-topped tables with driftwood bases. French doors lined one wall that opened onto a deck, and beyond that, the beach. The ocean looked almost green, shimmering in the sunshine. The view was so stunning, I gasped. "I know. Isn't it incredible?" Esme said. "It's breathtaking." The front door opened and closed, and a moment later, John ascended the stairs, carrying both of our suitcases.
Do you need help? I asked him. No, I've got it. John put the luggage down and then turned to smile at Esme. It's nice to see you.
You too.
Esme kissed John's cheek. In that moment, the two of them looked like a Hollywood version of the perfect couple. They were both tall and lean. John's fair hair and complexion made a striking counterpoint to Esme's dark hair and pale skin. I pushed the thought away.
Wow, this place is amazing. John looked around. How did you find it, Esme?
I found it, I said, faintly irritated that he was giving her the credit. Online, on one of those rental websites. I told you that.
Did you?
Must have forgotten. I'm assuming the bedrooms are on the third floor, right?
Yes, I've already picked mine out,
Esme said lightly.
Did you take the best one?
I asked, laughing.
Every time we rented a vacation house, there was always some friendly competition over who scored the best bedroom.
Esme almost always won.
Of course, but there are two bedrooms with ocean views, so you'd better grab the other one before Nick and Ford get here.
I'm on it, John said. He headed upstairs with our luggage.
I brought some wine. Do you want a glass?
Esme asked me.
That sounds perfect.
Esme went to the kitchen, which was at the far end of the room, just past a long dining table. She pulled wine glasses out of a cupboard and took a chilled bottle of white wine from the refrigerator. She poured two glasses and handed me one.
Let's go out on the deck, she said, heading toward the French doors.
I followed her outside. The deck was shaded by several large umbrellas, and a pleasant sea breeze blew off the water. Esme and I stood at the railing and looked at the beach and the vast expanse of ocean beyond. I breathed in deeply and felt myself relax for the first time in weeks.
It's so beautiful out here, Esme said.
She tipped her face up toward the sun and closed her eyes for a moment. She turned and smiled at me, holding her glass up.
Cheers to the best vacation yet, I said, clinking my glass against Esme's.
Definitely, Esme said. For starters, David won't be here to ruin it. He was always such a pain when we went on trips.
He wasn't that bad, I lied.
met, and the short courtship had proven to be misleading. David had been on his best behavior in those early days. It was only later that he started to display his darker side, his moodiness, his quick temper, his biting comments. The first time I saw it was a year or so after their wedding. The four of us were together in Orlando. David hadn't wanted to come because he thought Orlando was only for tacky tourists with sticky children. But John was attending a convention for work, and Esme had thought it would be fun to join us there. I'd been glad for the company. But one afternoon, I found myself alone at the hotel pool with David. John was at the convention center, and Esme had gone for a walk. "Don't you ever get tired of her entitlement?" David had asked. "What do you mean?" "You know exactly what I mean. Esme, she spent her entire life being handed everything, and somehow she's convinced herself that she's earned all of it." David had snorted and rattled the ice cubes in his plastic cup. It wasn't his first drink of the day. "Meanwhile, I've worked myself half to death for everything I have, and yet she's unimpressed because I didn't start a multi-million-dollar franchise. I'll never live up to her father." "I'm sure that's not true," I'd said. My loyalty had and would always be to Esme. "She loves you." David shook his head. "Don't be so naive. She's not the person you think she is. The only person Esme cares about is herself." Looking back, I was shocked that the marriage had lasted as long as it did. Nearly 20 years. I never understood what Esme saw in David. He was, I suppose, somewhat attractive, although I always thought he had a weak chin. Esme would occasionally mention how funny or smart David was, and once she'd told me that he'd been her rock when her mother died in a car accident. But I'd never seen that side of him, and I'd never forgotten that scathing tone he'd used to describe his new bride. "Oh, yes, he was," Esme now said. "Do you remember that trip to the Bahamas when he threw a hissy fit because the restaurant had sold out of the entree he'd wanted to order? So mortifying." "I don't remember that," I said. "How could you forget? We were all rolling our eyes." "Anyway," Esme looked at me, her eyes crinkling with concern. "How are you?" I smiled wanly. "I'm okay. The past few months have been difficult. I can't even imagine. Actually, I really can't, since I'm not a mother." Esme squeezed my arm. "How's Aiden doing?" I shrugged. "It's hard to tell. He's still in rehab, which I suppose is good, but what happens when he gets out? What if he relapses?" "He'll get the help he needs. Let's talk about something else, anything else. I'm tired of spending every moment of every day worrying about Aiden. Tell me about what's going on with you." I meant what I said. "You look fantastic." "Thank you. I feel good. I won't lie. The divorce was tough. But I feel like I've come through it stronger than I was before." "You've always been strong," I protested. "No," Esme shook her head emphatically. "Not always. But I'm getting there." "Are you seeing anyone?" She looked out at the ocean. "There is someone, but I'm not ready to talk about it yet." "I knew it," I said triumphantly. "You have that look about you. You're in love." "Caroline, stop." "Oh, come on. Give me some details. What's he like?" "All I'm going to tell you is that he's different from David." Esme smiled. "Which is a good thing." "What are you two talking about?" John asked, walking out on the deck. He'd poured himself a glass of wine. "Esme's love life," I teased. "She has a secret boyfriend." "Oh, really?" John looked intrigued. "Do tell." Esme shook her head. "There's nothing to tell. Not yet. Anyway." "Your brother and his husband have arrived," John said. "I saw them through the window. They just parked, so they'll be up any minute." Esme turned to me, her expression mischievous. "I can't wait to see what you think of Ford. I know you're not a fan." I leaned closer, lowering my voice to a whisper. "Is there something specific?" "No, I can't really explain it. There's just something about him that rubs me the wrong way." "Well, what do you know about him?" "That's just it. Practically nothing. Every time I've asked him anything about himself, where he's from, what his family's like, where he's worked, he shuts the conversation down." "You don't know what he does for a living?" "He doesn't work. Nick supports him," Esme shot back. "With my dad's money, of course, since he's yet again subsidizing Nick's latest failing business venture." "Which is what?" "I didn't tell you?" Esme laughed derisively. "Nick opened up a juice bar." "He did. When did that happen?" "A few months ago. It's in Bal Harbour, so I'm sure the rent is outrageous. I stopped by once. There were no customers. The girl who took my order was rude, and the green juice tasted rancid. I threw it out as soon as I left. But Nick is so delusional, he thinks he's going to turn it into a franchise. Just like Dad." So Ford's a gold digger, and he picked a husband with a failing business?" Esme looked at me almost impatiently. "What?" I asked. "Nick will be wealthy," she said. "Once Dad dies, he's already told us that he's planning to split
everything between the two of us. Half will go to me, half to Nick, which is complete bullshit. I spent the last 25 years working for the company, helping to build it into what it is today. What's Nick done? I wasn't sure what to say. I'll tell you. He spent his entire adult life spending money he didn't earn. Esme continued. And now he gets half of everything that my father and I have worked for. Do you think Ford knows how much Nick will inherit? I'm sure he does. Nick is absolutely besotted with him, which is just about the worst mistake you can make. What do you mean? It's never a good idea to be the one who's more in love. It puts you at a disadvantage. That's very cynical. Esme shook her head impatiently, as if I was missing some larger point she was making. Wait until you meet him. You'll see what I mean. Chapter 3. Nick was standing in the living room, looking around. He and Esme had the same creamy, pale skin and dark, wavy hair. But where Esme was elegant and angular, Nick had a thick build and small, squinty eyes that I'd always thought made him look squirrely. This place is dope, Nick announced. Hey, Essie, Caroline. He kissed each of us on the cheek and then attempted a fist bump with John, who looked confused by the gesture. Where's Ford? Esme asked. I'm right here. Ford appeared from a back hallway by the kitchen. Everyone turned to look at him, but that was probably normal for Ford. From his chiseled frame to his square superhero jaw to his striking green eyes, he was one of the best-looking men I had ever met. Hello, he said, smiling. I'm Ford Overfield. Overfield? Esme repeated. I didn't know you took Nick's last name. I did, Ford said. He turned to Nick and squeezed his hand. Why? Is that an issue? No, of course not. Esme started to speak, stopped, then shook her head. Never mind. It isn't important. Actually, it is important, Nick scowled. It's important to us. Calm down, Nick, Esme said. She crossed her arms and stared him down. I'll have something monogrammed for you. Nick looked furious, but Ford rested a hand on his husband's arm. We'd love that, Ford said to Esme. I've always wanted monogrammed sham covers. I'll get right on that. Esme smiled a smile that didn't reach her eyes. You have to come over and see the new place soon, Ford continued. We just finished remodeling the kitchen. Really? Esme said. After the conversation we'd had mere moments earlier, I could practically read her thoughts. How much did my father pay for that renovation? Are you going to do this all weekend? Nick asked. Do what? Esme replied. Picket me, picket Ford, picket our life together. I'm not picking, Esme said. I didn't say anything. You didn't have to say it. I could tell what you were thinking. Nick. Esme exhaled a long, aggravated breath. Please stop. This is supposed to be a vacation, not family therapy. We really should spare Ford, Caroline, and John from our issues. Nick opened his mouth, but before he could say anything, Ford squeezed his hand again. She's right, Ford said sweetly. We came here to relax, right? The change in Nick was instantaneous. His features softened, and he grinned shyly at his handsome husband. You're right. I'm sorry. I'll get into vacation mode. Esme threw me a pointed look, which Nick luckily missed. I was starting to see what Esme had been talking about. Nick was infatuated, which meant, of course, that Ford was in complete control. After the dust-up between Esme and Nick,
We all went our separate ways for the afternoon. I went upstairs to unpack. Esme said she was going to take a nap. Nick and Ford announced they were going to go for a drive to see the town.
Hey,
John said, coming into the room.
Where have you been?
Just admiring the view.
So, Esme and Nick,
John whistled.
That got interesting quickly.
He collapsed down on our bed, folding his hands underneath his head. You're lying on my dress, I said irritably.
What? Oh, sorry.
John pushed the garment aside with his leg, rumpling it even more.
What do you think happened down there?
With Esme and Nick, you mean? I asked, making sure to keep my voice low. I had no idea how thick the walls were here, and Esme's room was right next door. There are a lot of unresolved issues in that family, and the new husband is something else, John remarked.
Esme said the same thing, but honestly, I liked him. He completely diffused the conflict between Esme and Nick before it turned ugly, and trust me, they can get ugly.
I've seen it. I don't know. There's something about him that just seems off.
John rolled onto his side, propping up his head with one arm. I'm surprised you didn't sense that. You're normally so good at reading people.
I just met him. I could hardly form an opinion that quickly.
You make snap judgments all the time. Why stop now?
I paused with a pile of t-shirts still in my hands.
And now you're picking at me. Why?
I'm not.
Yes, you are. It's none of our business who Nick marries. He's a big boy.
John raised his hands, palms out.
Hey, now, I was just making conversation. Besides, Esme's your best friend. I would have thought you'd be concerned on her behalf.
Why?
Because if Ford is after Nick's money, that affects Esme.
I don't see how.
Esme gets her share of their father's inheritance regardless. If Nick decides to spend his portion remodeling his house with his husband, that's his choice.
I could feel my headache start to throb again behind my eyes. Right now, I had more important things to worry about than how Esme's father planned to split his multi-million dollar estate. I suddenly, desperately wanted to be alone. I'm going downstairs.
And do what?
Sit on the deck, breathe in the fresh air, read, and do my best to clear my mind. Chapter 4. The alcohol was flowing freely, and everyone seemed tipsy before dinner was even served. Esme's face was flushed pink, and she was giggling uncontrollably at a story about the time John and his college friends went on a spur-of-the-moment road trip to Las Vegas. John was more relaxed and gregarious than I'd seen him in weeks, and he was clearly enjoying Esme's attention. Nick was also listening, interrupting frequently with anecdotes from his younger, wild child years. I wandered over to where Ford was manning the grill. He tested one of the steaks with an index finger and then flipped it over. The meat sizzled on the hot grates.
That looks delicious, I commented. Where did you learn to cook?
Here and there. Ford alone seemed sober. He'd had a glass of Prosecco earlier, but was now nursing a can of sparkling water.
Did you ever cook professionally?
For a bit, when I was in my early 20s.
Where'd you work?
Ford glanced up at me. His expression was pleasant, but I had a feeling he wasn't comfortable with my questions.
Nowhere you would have heard of.
I was a line cook, nothing fancy.
Still, a great skill to have. You know, Esme never told me how you and Nick met.
This time, Ford smiled. I was struck again by how incredibly handsome he was. It was hard not to stare. We actually had quite a meet cute, he said. It was like something out of a movie. We were both at the park, walking our dogs. They started playing with one another,
and their leashes got tangled up. We started chatting and didn't want to stop, so we went for a coffee. And then we still didn't want to stop talking, so we went to lunch at a bistro, this place with an outdoor patio so we could bring the dogs. We've basically been together ever since. That's adorable. It was a charming story, but I felt a pang of sadness. When had the romance disappeared from my marriage? Had it been there one day, gone the next? Or had it rotted away so slowly I hadn't noticed it disappear? I know, it's so cute. It's borderline annoying. Ford smiled. How did you and your husband meet? I glanced over at John, who was sitting on one of the cushioned patio chairs, his legs crossed, a hand waving in the air as he spoke. He looked like a man without a care in the world, not a father with a son in rehab facing criminal prosecution. Maybe that wasn't fair, I thought. It was exhausting to constantly worry about Aiden. John probably needed a break, and he was clearly enjoying having an audience. He'd always loved being the center of attention. No meet cute for us. We were set up by a mutual friend. A blind date? That could qualify. I suppose, but not in our case. John was actually seeing someone else, an abrasive woman that our mutual friend didn't like going on double dates with. She was hoping I'd divert his attention. It obviously worked. Not right away. John kept dating both of us for months. It was actually kind of horrible and dramatic. In that sort of way that once you look back on it, you wonder why you ever tolerated it. But you won in the end. Ford nodded in John's direction. He chose you. Actually, he didn't. Maybe I shouldn't have been so honest, but it's not as if John had been so careful with my feelings lately. The other girl got tired of his equivocating and broke up with him. If I won, it was by default. Ford looked back at his steaks. I wondered if he was embarrassed by my confession, but then he said in a softer voice, "Well, winning isn't always a montage from a Rocky movie. Sometimes it just means getting what you want in the end, even if you have to wait for it." "I know," I said, still watching my husband. He looked completely at ease, his long, lanky frame stretched out, his face flushed, his eyes bright. I thought back to those early days of our relationship, which were so filled with constant drama, and my unwavering belief that being with John was worth waiting for him to choose me. Was it? I wondered now. If I had the benefit of age and experience, would I have made the same choice? I wasn't sure that I would. Dinner was delicious. I suspected that Ford's cooking experience was more extensive than he'd led me to believe. The steaks were perfectly done, and he'd seasoned the grilled corn with a spicy butter I would have eaten on anything. Afterward, we all lounged on the cushioned chairs and love seat. We'd plugged in the Christmas lights that were entwined around the deck posts. It felt almost magical, sitting there amid the twinkling lights, listening to the ocean as the tide rolled in. Or it did, right up until a group of teenagers ran out on the beach, screaming so loudly it sounded as if one of them was being murdered. "Isn't it past their bedtime?" John murmured. "It's definitely past mine," I said. "They're just having a good time. Don't you remember being that young?" "Feels like yesterday to me," Esme mused. "I was never that young," John joked. "Let's put on some music," Nick suggested. "I saw a speaker in the front hall closet." He went to retrieve the outdoor speaker, and Esme synced her phone to it. Soon a 90s playlist of Esme's favorite songs was blaring. "I think we should turn it down a little," I said, feeling like the mom ruining everyone's fun. "Don't worry. The neighbors won't be able to hear over the sound of the ocean," Esme said, her words slightly slurred. This wasn't true, but I knew it was pointless to argue with a drunk person. Soon, Esme, Nick, and John were all dancing to Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe.
We could video this and use it to blackmail them, Ford remarked.
I hadn't noticed him move to stand next to me. I smiled. I was just thinking the same thing.
Do you think drunk people know how ridiculous they look dancing?
Isn't that a saying? Dance like no one's watching you? Ford asked.
It may be, but it's not good advice.
It should be, dance like your future employer is looking at your social media account.
Spoken like a true mother.
I shivered. But whether it was at his words or at the cool cut of the wind blowing off the water, I wasn't sure.
I'd long ago given up the fantasy that I was or could ever be the perfect mother.
Are you and Nick planning on having children?
No, Ford said.
I don't see that for us.
I nodded. I wanted to say, that's probably wise, that children are a gamble under the best of circumstances. But it's the one thing mothers aren't allowed to say, even if it's true.
We got a cheesecake at the store. Maybe I should put it out?
Ford nodded at the dancers. It might soak up some of the booze.
Better not, I said.
Why not?
Esme can't resist cheesecake. It's her kryptonite.
So?
I looked at him, surprised. Didn't you know? Esme's diabetic.
Ford shook his head.
Nick never mentioned it.
She's had diabetes since she was a kid. In fact, I'm wondering if all the wine she's had is a good idea. I don't think she's supposed to drink this much.
Jesus, Ford looked concerned. Should we intervene?
No. Esme gets defensive when anyone brings it up. I'll just remind her to check her blood sugar levels before she goes to bed. It's not the first time I've done it.
You two have been friends for a while?
I've known Esme more than half my life. I watched my friend dance, her arms raised over her head, her hips swinging from side to side. There's nothing that I don't know about her.
That must be nice, Ford remarked. I don't think I have any friends I've known for that long.
I'm not good about staying in touch with people.
I'm not either.
Esme's the only one from school who I stayed close to.
I don't get the feeling that she likes me very much.
I glanced at Ford, but he was watching Esme dance. I wasn't sure what to say. I had a feeling that if I protested, if I said that of course Esme liked him, Ford would know I was lying.
She probably just needs time to get to know you better, I said.
Somehow, I doubt that would help.
I get it. She's a protective older sister. And Ford and I married quickly.
Esme did too, I said.
She did?
Yes.
She and David only dated for a few months before they got married.
Esme shimmied over toward us, holding her hand out.
Come on. Caro, dance with me. We never dance anymore.
I laughed.
That's because we're old.
Hush. We're still 20 years old and dancing at Tipitina's in New Orleans,
Esme protested. I smiled but shook my head. Esme danced back towards Nick and John. I watched while she wrapped her arms around my husband's neck. A move that might have been provocative if she wasn't so drunk. John glanced at me, saw that I was watching, and gently dislodged her hands.
Is it time to stage an intervention?
Ford asked quietly.
Probably, I said.
I caught John's eye again.
He nodded and leaned forward to murmur to Esme. She protested at first, but finally shrugged and nodded.
Esme's wasted, Nick said. I've never seen her like this.
I have, I said, but not for a decade or two.
What was she drinking?
Wine, I think, I said.
And then a few vodka sodas, and then some more wine.
Nick laughed.
She's going to feel terrible tomorrow morning.
I should get her upstairs before she throws herself at John and causes irreparable damage to Caroline's marriage.
I shook my head. No worries. She doesn't mean any harm.
She's just had too much to drink. I'll help you take her up, Ford said. They went to Esme and Nick took her by the arm. Bedtime, Nick told her.
But we're dancing.
You can dance tomorrow, Ford assured her.
Fine, but I am bringing my wine with me, Esme said, picking up her glass of red wine. Don't forget to make sure she checks her blood sugar level,
I called as Ford and Nick led Esme into the house. Esme has officially been overserved, John said, joining me. I noticed. Do you think she's going to be okay? I nodded, watching through the French doors as Nick and Ford navigated Esme up the stairs. She'll be fine. Esme always is. Chapter 5. John was still sleeping when I woke up the next morning. He snored softly, one arm thrown over his face. I watched the gentle rise and fall of his chest for a few moments before I slid out of bed and padded downstairs. I filled the coffee pot, and as it brewed, I reread the list of instructions the owner of the rental had affixed to the refrigerator with little magnets. It included directions on how to turn the house alarm off and on, including the 4-digit code. Nick had set the alarm last night, I remembered, and I went to turn it off so I wouldn't mistakenly activate it if I went outside while the others slept in. I poured myself a mug of coffee and took it out on the deck, where evidence of last night's festivities lay scattered around. After Nick and Ford had put Esme to bed, they'd come back downstairs, and the four of us had cleaned up. But even with the group effort, we'd missed a plate here, a crumpled napkin there. I settled in on a cushioned chair and gazed out at the ocean. My thoughts turned to my son. I wondered if he was sleeping or if the rehab facility ran on a strict schedule. I had no idea. We were only allowed limited contact with him, and the few times we had spoken, the conversations had been strained and disjointed. You're up early. I glanced up and saw Ford, wearing a crisp blue and white striped robe over his pajamas and holding a coffee mug. He raised it to me. Thanks for making coffee. You're welcome. It's the least I could do after that wonderful dinner. I guess everyone else is sleeping off last night's hangover. I wouldn't be surprised. There are a lot of empty wine bottles in the recycling bin. You didn't drink very much, Ford commented.
No.
I've never been a big drinker, I agreed. I get terrible headaches, and drinking wine always makes them worse. I'm regretting the 2 glasses of Prosecco I had last night.
Oh my God, it's so bright out here. Nick appeared, rubbing his eyes. His hair was standing on end and his t-shirt was inside out. Why is it so bright?
It's the sunshine state, honey. Ford smiled and reached out a hand to squeeze Nick's. How are you feeling?
Terrible.
Nick grimaced.
I am never, ever going to drink again.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, well, this time I mean it. How's Esme? She's got to be in worse shape than I am.
She's not up yet, I said.
Oh, really?
Nick perked up.
Let's go into her room and bang some pots together. I used to do that when we were kids, and she'd freak out every time. It was hilarious.
I doubt she'd find it hilarious now, Ford pointed out.
No, but it might make me feel better.
Nick sighed. The rest of the morning passed by quietly. John eventually got up, and the four of us puttered around the vacation house, making breakfast, drinking coffee, scrolling through our phones. By 11, Esme still hadn't appeared. We were all sitting in the living room, making half-hearted plans for what we were going to do for the rest of the day. I want something greasy and salty for lunch, Nick said. It's the best cure for a hangover. We could go out to lunch, Ford suggested. I'd be up for that, John agreed.
I'm gonna get a cheeseburger and fries, Nick announced, and possibly some onion rings.
And a chocolate shake. What about Esme? I said. Maybe we should wake her up and see if she wants to join us.
I'll go get the pots and pans, Nick joked.
No, I'll go get her, I said. I'll bring her up a cup of coffee. I just made a fresh pot, Ford said. He nodded towards the kitchen. I poured Esme a coffee, added some half and half to it, and headed upstairs. Nick followed me. I'm going to hop in the shower, he said. Tell Esme to get her butt in gear. I'm starving. The house had four bedrooms, two on the ocean side and two overlooking the street.